Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The governor is on the line. Tim Brando, the great play-by-play legend from Fox Sports, after sitting back and watching all these games all day. As you can tell, Governor, I'm a little worked up about some of the late-night shenanigans.
Well, it's great to be with you, Scotty. I came home from the ACC tournament in Brooklyn, convinced Virginia was the best team I had seen all year.
And, right.
As you know, I've seen a lot of college basketball in the Big East, the Big Ten, and certainly in the ACC. And then we find out, as I got home, I got Montezuma's revenge. It was like all of the sickness that was in my family. I finally relaxed, and the Gremlins moved in. I lost 9 pounds in 4 days.
Wow.
So I'm just coming out, okay? I finally had my first full meal today. I mowed my lawn today. I'm going to play my first round of golf in the morning. So, you know, I'm finally in good health and happy to be with you. I've never seen, and you'll never see, nor will we ever hear, I think, of any upset in our lifetime any bigger than what UNBC did tonight.
And right.
There are a lot of different levels of perspective and storylines that I could share with you, but it would get in the way of the main thing, which is, I think, the best of 3 weeks in sports. This is why it is. This is why, you know, the runs that I had in being a part of the NCAA tournament meant so much to me. I'm thrilled for Raf that he was there, because he's the guy you most want to have courtside to give you a sense of perspective, which he did at the end of the game with Nance and Grant Hill. It was amazing. At a certain point in time, if somebody's going to ask me, and it's already happened on Twitter, is this the biggest upset in the history of sports? And honestly, the only two upsets that I can think of that would be anywhere in the stratosphere with this are both individual sports. They're not team sports. Francis Ouimet against Harry Vardon, 1913 at Brookline, U.S. Open, and Buster Douglas. I mean, I can't think of any others that are in the same breath with this, and those are both individual sports, not team sports.
Right.
This is by far and away, it is not close. I defy anyone to tell me that any other college game or any pro game of any magnitude was any more historic in terms of David beating Goliath.
Except, you know, maybe.
And particularly in the NCAA tournament, in a championship environment, I can't think of one that comes close.
I'll give you that.
He was unguardable. He was absolutely unguardable. And for Ryan Odom, who was a ball boy in 85 at Virginia when his dad, Dave, was on Terry Holland's staff when I did my first ACC game, to be the coach of that team, to beat UVA the way that he did tonight, is incredible. Absolutely incredible.
Yeah, listen, we watched the game. We were losing our minds. We kept, you know, cutting it down from 7 to 5 to 3 to 2, and I was like, they can't score 17 points. Carver High said it to me when you were saying it, you know, of any game ever, and I got to give him credit. I think the only game that I can even compare it to in terms of my lifetime would be the USA beating Russia in the Olympics in hockey.
Yeah, okay. And that's a team sport. And it was a championship and international and national moment. Absolutely.
That was like the one moment in my life that I'll never forget. Like, I watched, what was it, the movie Miracle the other night again for like the 38th time. And I still like it, right? Like, in basketball, in terms of basketball, in pro or college,
Nothing comes close.
Nothing even remotely comes close.
Actually, if you think back, and this is another sad fact for Virginia fans to deal with, especially those that are older than me. I'll never forget when Samson was at Virginia in the year they were planning the big Georgetown-Virginia matchup.
Right.
With a made-for-TV special. That year, I think it was the 83 season, if memory serves me correctly.
That's right.
The beginning of the 83 season, Chaminade beat Virginia in a preseason.
In Hawaii.
November, in Hawaii.
I remember that, too. That's how old I am. So that's a good that's a great call.
You can make a case that the two biggest upsets in the modern era in the history of college basketball, Virginia was on the wrong side.
Who did Valpo beat that time in the tournament?
When Valparaiso won against Mississippi, that was a 13-4 matchup.
Right.
So not as upset.
What else, Carver High? You got another one. Here we go, Carver
High. My question, I was going to ask you this, Scott, and since Tim's here, I'll ask him too. Is this win a 16 over a 1, or what George Mason did going all the way to the Final Four?
I think this is bigger.
No, this is bigger. 16 versus 1 is bigger. 135 times in the history of the tournament expanding to 64 teams in 84, okay, we've seen this happen. 135 times, number one always advanced to the second round. Just looking at the graphic after – you know, the game is over and you advance the team and you see the 16 seed in that second wave of games.
Right.
That's historic. It's never happened. Not in the history of basketball. And in a lot of ways, and again, Jim Larrañaga's accomplishment at George Mason was incredible, but it was quickly equaled, in my opinion, when DCU and Butler did it in the same year in 2011, both made it to the NCAA tournament. DCU came out of the first four, if you recall, with Shaka Smart's team. And Butler, with Hayward, got there in 2010, and then they did it again without Hayward in 2011, and I had their two buzzer-beating wins in Washington, D.C. One was against the number one seed Pitt in the second round. They had advanced from an 8-9 game and moved all the way to the Final Four. What Valpo did at that time, which was 20 years ago, and I had him with Al McGuire in the regional in 98 that year.
Right.
They had beaten Ole Miss that was, you know, a really good team. Rob Evans had a really good – Michael White, the coach at Florida, was on that team, played for Ole Miss on that team. They were really good. They were a very solid basketball team, but they were a four seed. I mean, 13s beat four is a lot. And the following game, it was a great draw for Valparaiso, because in the next game they got Florida State. And Florida State was one of the few 8 and 10 teams in the history of the NCAA tournament to get a bid. They're still one of like a handful of teams that got in at 8 and 10. Syracuse is another one, by the way, which just won today and got into the round of 32 with that win against TCU. So those are big upsets, and they will last for a long time. Santa Clara beating Arizona when Lute Olson was there was a 15 over a 2. 15s have beaten 2s. 14s have beat 3s routinely. 16-1 never happened. I don't know. Will it happen again? More than likely, and I think it should send a message to a lot of people that when I come on your air and other people that follow college basketball understand this, but those that don't follow basketball until the tournament starts and say, well, you know, only 8 or 9 teams can win this thing. I think I was on your air a couple of weeks ago and I said there are as many as 40 teams, 40 of the 68, that probably realistically have a chance to get to the Final Four. Now, a lot of people think that you're out of your mind. What are you talking about? That's hyperbolic. No, it's not. It's not. We were always close to a 16 beating one. The game in 96 that I had, my first NCAA tournament. And I give Mark Wolf a lot of credit. The CBS guys, they ran it with about 16 minutes left. Right when they had opened up, I think, a 14-point lead. They did a quick recap, a vignette on near misses. And everybody remembers, obviously, Georgetown-Princeton in 89 with Pete Carrill's team.
Right.
And the foul that wasn't called on Reggie Williams, by the way, which could have allowed Princeton to win. Reggie did foul, and they should have had a chance to go to the line. But that was in 89, and a lot of people saw that because in those days, ESPN was carrying the early rounds. John Saunders and I traded off with Vitale hosting because network television wasn't carrying weeknight games back then. And that only started at CBS in 1990. But in 96, I had the game with Western Carolina, the Catamounts, with two looks, an iron untimed from three that could have won it against number one seeded Purdue, and then a follow, the guy that took the shot, got his own rebound, had a runner in the lane, the iron was untimed again, and they went down to Purdue. Purdue later lost to Georgia, Tubby Smith's team, and you'll remember that Georgia team lost in a heartbreaker to Syracuse when they went on to the Final Four with the Wallace shot. Remember that great shot Wallace hit for Syracuse
yeah.
to beat Georgia in 96? So there have been times when this almost happened. But to consider where we are in today's college basketball versus back then, the separation between the really big-name schools and the big-name conferences and the mid-majors, especially in the one-and-done era, fellas, it's as fine a line as we've ever seen. Don't be surprised if we don't see some other major upsets. I'm sure right now Kentucky fans are like, oh, man, this really opened up the bracket for us. We're sitting pretty. Guess what? You better guard the Buffalo guards. They might kick your ass. Buffalo might kick your ass, Kentucky.
Right.
And if you don't think that, if you're not thinking that way, you're sadly mistaken. Because these schools may not have names you recognize, but their players, especially those that have been around for a lot of years, and Ryan Odom's got several of them on that team at UMBC, they feel like they can line up and beat people, and they do.
How about Buffalo and UMBC in the Sweet 16? We're talking to the governor, Tim Brando. Hopefully he's got another one in him and he doesn't have to make another run to the header. I want to ask him about when we come back. They did a feature the other day on like the select few that have been lucky enough to be part of this NCAA tournament over the years as broadcasters and play-by-play guys that have been able to be in that fraternity of the select few, and he's one of them. He's called some of the greatest games ever. He's been a part of this tournament forever, and he's enjoying it now like we are. These games are crazy. We're talking to Tim Brando on the bench on a pain-free Friday. He's been sick, but he's coming to the plate. He's going to the free throw line late in the game, not afraid to throw up. All net, baby. So our favorite all time on the bench, hands down, the governor, Tim Brando, the one and only leader of men. He's chilling at home. He's had a little dose of reality since he got off of the road. He was up in Brooklyn. That's what Brooklyn will do to you. He went home and spent a lot of time in the men's room looking at himself in a mirror, wondering where all the years went. But when they talk about your career and they put you in that fraternity of the story they did the other day where they just talked about the guys, the select few, you're like the Marines of broadcasting where you – are one of the lucky guys that have ever been able to, like, call the NCAA tournament and all the greatest games ever. How does it feel to be in that breath?
Oh, sure. It means a lot. And I'm still a huge fan of the event. And you've asked it. A number of other people have asked it. Honestly, I don't miss doing it because I love watching it. You know, today's the perfect example. Those guys that are working right now and still doing games, some of them just finishing up, they didn't get to see what we saw today. They didn't get to see history like we saw with Virginia and UMBC. When you get to watch all of it from beginning to end of each day on Thursday and Friday, Scotty, it's so much fun. And there is some fan in me, okay? I'm a fan of the game itself. And so when you're working it, you're so privileged to be at midcourt and calling it, and you're wrapped up in it. Adrenaline takes over, but you're kind of living in your own vacuum. You try to keep up with other things going on, you know, updating the brackets and what your game might mean in terms of the next round and all that. But it's tough to get a feel for really what's been going on throughout the rest of the tournament at the three other sites while you're on. And, you know, the next day you're going to practices and interviewing players while second round games are going on. Okay. So it's hard to keep up with everything that's going on that first weekend if you're actually working. So now that I've moved on and I'm at Fox and I'm tremendously happy, I'll be the first to say that I'm helping drive the ratings up for CBS and Turner and True and TBS, because I love this event. I love watching it, and I still feel like I'm part of it, even though I'm not, because I love it so much. So, but those to be put in that article, which by the way was done by an advanced journalism school at Auburn, and the people at Awful Announcing decided to publish it. I was honored to be in that group. It was a tremendous company to be a part of.
So what do you think, Timmy? Do you think, my first question is about the weekend, is Purdue loses Haas. To me, like, Hunter being out of that Virginia lineup tonight, they said, oh, they'll be fine. They're a great defensive team. Well, they weren't fine without him. And now Haas is gone. And I don't know how you play without that monstrosity of a force in the middle and rebounding and finishing around the rim. I don't know how they do it without him, seriously.
Well, it will change the way that game was played. To your DeAndre Hunter point, I immediately changed my bracket. I had Virginia winning it all after I saw him play last week, and I thought DeAndre Hunter, and I had talked to Tony Bennett after doing that crazy game at Louisville when they got they were able to eradicate a four-point lead with 0.9 seconds left in the game. I had talked with Tony at Louisville and then again at the ACC tournament, and there was no denying that the difference in this year's Virginia team, especially late in the season, was the development of DeAndre Hunter, because DeAndre Hunter is a future pro, and he's a guy that can create his own shot, and not at the point guard position or not even at the two spot. He's a four player. He's a power forward that can sometimes play the five, and if things break down, he can create. He did a lot of that in the ACC tournament. North Carolina had all kinds of issues with him in the championship game. So I think when they lost him, that had to be a big blow to a lot of those players, a lot of his teammates, because even though he was a sixth man of the year, he had been inserted into the starting lineup late by Bennett, and it was making a difference in them more offensively than defensively, although he was awfully good on the defensive side as well. There was a time in that game, if you remember in the second half, there were, I think, 12 unanswered points right at the start of the second half. But you kind of felt like, okay, Virginia's still Virginia. They're going to play their game, and they'll be okay. At about the, 11 or 12-minute mark, when the lead got to 16, you started seeing Ty Jerome and Kyle Guy taking quick shots, which Virginia never does. And to me, that was a sign of panic beginning to get in there. And I think one of the reasons was they knew that they couldn't make an entry pass to Diakite or to, you know, Jack Salt to create anything, because those guys, you know, they get most of their points on offensive rebounding. They don't run stuff for those guys. They do run some stuff for DeAndre Hunter, and he wasn't available to them. So I thought Virginia took some ill-advised shots and panicked a little bit. And that led to, you know, one bad shot leads to a run out the other way. And it allowed the lead of 14 or 15 to expand to 20, 21 real quick. And then it was lights out. I thought the Hunter loss was not only significant for the tournament, but it was very obvious to me that it had an impact on the Virginia kids emotionally in the game tonight. For Haas and Purdue, I saw them, as you know, three times this year. He is, 20 years ago, he would have been a lottery pick, because he's a back-to-the-basket big that has all the moves that you want, drop step, crossover step, everything you need, super jump hook, great turnaround, bank shot off the baseline. It's all there. And now they don't have that. But with, you know, Vincent Edwards and Carson Edwards, you still have great guards. Dakota Mathias is an outstanding shooter. They've got a lot more options offensively than Virginia does. And the kid Matt Harms, that's from the Netherlands, from Amsterdam, the 7-footer that's going to get the lion's share of playing time with Haas out, he's actually a better rim protector than Haas is. because he's faster and he can get up and down the floor exceedingly well. Now, they're going to need him to play more minutes because of the loss of Isaac Hodge. But I think, you know, that don't turn out the lights on Purdue just yet. I think they'll be okay. But it will change things for Butler because they won't have to deal with the double or not double Isaac Haas on an entry pass. You don't have to worry about that aspect for Laval. For Laval, the head coach of Butler, Laval Jordan, he won't have to worry about that quite as much. So I think the news for Butler is you have a better chance, and your scout and your game planning for Purdue got a little easier, but you still have to guard those magnificent perimeter people for Purdue, and that's going to be a tough out for Butler. They need Keelan Martin, and they need Kamar Baldwin to play at the very highest level, which they did today. They're going to have a follow-up performance if they're going to advance to the Sweet 16. Otherwise, they're not Purdue.
That's fascinating. I didn't even know about the kid from the Netherlands, and I thought I was clever, but that just taught me a lot about their depth that Painter has on a bench. Tim, hit him straight tomorrow. I know you will. I hope you feel good. I hope you're not far from a bathroom on a golf course. You never know what could happen out there. Just, you know, maybe bring a roll for the woods or something.
Well, here's the deal. You know, after 8 months on the road, I usually gain about 10. It was nice to lose 9. It helped me on my spring and summer diet.
Look good. You look good, brother. I love you. Hey, thanks for coming on the bench tonight. Enjoy the games this weekend and play golf great tomorrow. I'm glad you're home with the family. You've earned it. Great season of calling basketball on Fox and ACC Network. You're the best.
Thank you, pal. And I wish all my friends at CBS and Turner the best the rest of the way. It is the best 3 weeks in sports. Take care.
All right, my man. Tim Brando, the governor, with us tonight on the bench.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.